Blog Talk Radio.
The internet. It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Hello and welcome to Indie Innertube, your home for all that is hot and streaming in the world of online independent entertainment. Today is June 12th. We are live and this is episode number
154. Ooh, you didn't think I was going to be on that, did you?
I didn't, no. And hey, what? Do you know what is very special about Indie Innertube?
We're awesome.
This is Commander Shepard. And this is my favorite podcast and live-hosted web series on the Citadel.
Yeah, bitches.
Because Commander Shepard loves us.
Because Commander Shepard said so. So now I want her from Shelf Life.
Right.
Being like, you better fucking watch any fucking inner tube, fuckers. I mean, like, yes!
That's language.
I know. Don't blame me. That's her character.
Did you send me that article? Because I want to read that before we talk about it.
I did. It's in the skies.
So welcome, everybody.
Hi.
We're back.
Woo!
We are desperately trying to be more consistent. We are going to do it. And whether or not you believe it, Indie Interstate is also...
It's coming.
Coming, and it will be relaunched as a full web series.
Boom, boom, boom.
Right, Amanda?
Yes.
It's true.
Bum, 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 bum.
But today's going to be all news and reviews. But first, birthdays.
Birthdays. Oh, and I'm on that too. Check it out. This past Sunday, the 9th. Actually, we should do all the way to next past week. So the 4th, Dingani Beza. It's his birthday. Just so you know. 6th, Kaylee Bison. Yeah. 7th, Darren Strauss. How are you people born? At this time of day and month. Brian Rodas was this past Sunday. Rafi Fine was this past Sunday. Trying to see. Holdings! And tomorrow, Friday, Louis Roscoe's birthday. Blake Calhoun's birthday is Saturday. Tom Woodley's birthday is Saturday. Next week, on the 17th, it's Edit Beery's birthday. He has the best name ever. Yeah. Did I miss any? Do you have some? Did I miss some?
I don't know. I'm not the one that's supposed to be on that.
I'm just saying. No, I mean, do you have some on Indie Innertube that I might not have?
One of my favorite producers at HSN had a birthday the other day.
Hey.
Allison. She's awesome. You guys would love her.
And see, next week is going to be fun because you've got Michael Taylor Gray and Taryn O'Neill. Freaking Wonder Woman's having a birthday. And Zelda Hallman. Justin Marchard. Yeah.
So.
What up?
Amanda, what's been going on with you lately?
House.
Oh, we've got a lot going on, and we do plan to rebrand Indie Innertube, Indie Interstate, and Indie Innertube TV for relaunch in July.
Yes. So we're kind of in a semi-hiatus period, which is why our episodes are kind of sporadic right now. But come July, we will be relaunching everything, and it'll be a brand new summer for almost a year since we've been here. Since we moved. But I do have to mention something that's coming up on the 14th, especially for anybody and everybody in New York. Jen Dodd is having I can't even say her character's General Assembly is having a new talent blowout on 6/14 at the People's Improv Theater on 123 East 24th Street in New York. Y'all should go. It's freaking hilarious. By the way, the two hosts characters that will be bringing it to you of hers are Butsky and Glasscock, who used to be in adult film and are now talent agents, which is probably closer to reality than most people would care to admit. But that's the 14th. So anybody in New York should go. Just saying. Anyway.
Lots of stuff to talk about. Rain Dance Film Festival has announced that they are doing the UK's first independent web festival. And it's going to take place on the 28th and 29th of September during the Rain Dance Film Festival at the Apollo Cinema in Piccadilly Circus. Now, I'm going to put the link up in the chat room. Do-do-do. There it is. Because you guys should all be aware of this. The entry fee is on that page, as well as the submission regulations and guidelines. And they're looking for some of the best independent web series from around the world for the First London Web Fest. So be aware, be prepared. The deadline for submissions is July 15th, which is a Monday. And the selected web series will be contacted by Thursday, the 1st of August, 2013. So it's extremely important that we support these web festivals when they start to happen. And this one has a really good pedigree, and Rain Dance has been very supportive of the space. And I think this is wonderful, and I hope that many of you will submit. I think their submission price is very reasonable, don't you?
Yes. Not only that, considering that you're speaking of making sure we keep in touch with international goings-on, if you're not following Van Web Series on Twitter, it is Vancouver or Van City Web Series. They're actually calling it Webcouver. They're very, very up to date and connected with everybody who does web series in Vancouver, and they are promoting all of the festivals, such as the Vancouver Web Fest, the Roma Web Fest, Holly Web Fest, Melbourne Web Fest, Mars Web Fest.
And yes, they're going to be producing the Vancouver Web Fest.
Yes, London Web Fest, HK Web Fest, New York City Web Fest. So, you know, like I said, follow Van Web Series on Twitter.com, or just look up Van City Web Series on Twitter or on Google. It's awesome, awesome, awesome.
And while we have Elsar here, I want to say kudos on the first season of your web series. It was fantastic. If you guys did not have a chance to watch Threesome, you should. It was extremely well done. Wonderful chemistry between the principal cast. Acting was very good. Production values were high. The story was intriguing and interesting, and not something you see done that often. I'm hoping we get a second season. I'm pretty sure we're going to get a second season, but I really think you all should watch it and support Elsar and the group that was behind the play and the web series. It was wonderful, wonderful for our space to see this kind of content continuing to be made. Amanda?
Yeah. Hello. And it's transmedia. And it's not traditional. I say traditional transmedia as if there's a traditional transmedia out there. But do you know of any other web series complement that also has a theatrical?
Started as a play.
It's actually started on stage.
I think it was one other, and that was it.
Yeah.
They were done by telefilms.
Yes. I'm loving it.
Okay. So let's before we tell everybody what we've been up to and we get into the reviews, let's talk news because it's going to get us going and we're going to be talking about it for a while. Save the Time Warner one. Go with something else first.
Oh, go with something else? Okay. Very cool. Japan, this is from bbc.co.uk. Japan has decided that it is going to test 4K television streams over the internet. They are carrying out tests to prove that 4K resolution video can be streamed over the internet to television set-top boxes to bring you more than high definition. If you have not seen something in 4K, it almost makes your brain hurt, does it not?
It does, and there's not enough content.
I know it. But we saw it in at CES in January, and it was just it hurt because it felt almost like virtual reality. Like my brain was trying to figure out what was going on on the television, why it wasn't real as my brain was computing it to be as real as it was. It's insane. But again, it's currently difficult to find 4K video content to make the most of TVs that support it. So if you don't know what 4K is, 4K broadcasts over four times the amount of detail as 1080p high definition. It really is kind of too much for your brain to comprehend. when you see it on a large enough screen because you feel like you're in it. Once they do a 4K movie, I'm out. You know, I'll be like, nope, I'm good. apparently, because the internet is an awesome thing and it's only been around for like 30 years or more, the cable operators have decided to buff up their guides for the internet age. Comcast and cable television systems, as well as other cable providers, have introduced new program guides on television set-top boxes that are supposed to act more like websites, which are in order to make it easier to find movies, live television shows, and on-demand video. It's a brand new thing that they're deciding to do. and really, it's a battle against Netflix and Hulu to try and retain and keep cable subscribers. I'm like,
can we get into the controversial shit now?
Well, I was going to say upgrading your cable guide isn't really going to keep people subscribing. It might, though. It might. Did you read it? Because I got one more thing of news that people are going to...
I read enough. Yeah, I read it. I read that one in the original article, too.
Okay. Can I read...
I have a couple of others that are just as infuriating.
Okay, well, let me get... This is a bonus. Do you want to save the happy one that I have for the end?
Oh, no. Go ahead and tell it now.
Well...
Because, you know, the people in the chat room don't want to hear us get riled up and pissed off about the state of the space. I know they don't want to hear us cause controversy.
No, but you know BBC American sci-fi series Orphan Black and Tatiana Maslany, who plays and who does an awesome job. If you haven't seen the show, you should. She has decided to join the voices of Captain Canuck, the animated web series.
Awesome.
So I'm like, for any of y'all who are having Orphan Black feels right now and miss her, you can catch her there, as well as, don't forget, Laura Vandervoot from CTV's Bitten, Chris Holden Reed, who actually is the voice of the captain, and as well as Paul Amos, both of which are from Lost Girl. It's by Mind's Eye Entertainment. Huh. Funny that. Remember them? Mm-hmm. And they are developing a live-action feature film adaptation based on the Captain Canuck comic book series. So it is being written by Arn Olsen, whose screen credits include Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and Cop and a Half. So I think it's very cool. They have no live actor set so far.
I would agree. Now, I have another piece of feel-good news.
Okay. I like to feel good. Do you want to say that for after the rant?
Ruby Sky PI, created by Jill Golic.
Yes.
Who is has been featured on this show numerous times. We haven't had Jill on, but we've talked about the show quite a lot. We featured it both here and on IndieInnerTube TV. They, this week, inked a deal with CBC Television in Canada, through which, ultimately, the show will be broadcast on the main CBC TV channel. Now, they've done two seasons of Ruby Sky PI, and the deal is going to send Ruby Sky to the Kids CBC Online Hub next year in the winter of 2014. And then it will also play on CBC TV with lots of transmedia options running in between the episodes. The quote is, "CBC is quickly emerging as a front runner in digital innovation," said Kim Wilson, creative head of children's and youth programming at CBC. "We're proud to be continuing to innovate new multi-platform initiatives with the incorporation of web-based series Ruby Sky PI to Kids CBC." They're also eyeing further distribution in the U.S., and they continue to post behind-the-scenes videos on YouTube. I think this is fantastic news, and I hope
you
will all find Jill on Facebook and or Twitter, and you will congratulate her on this huge, huge news for Ruby Sky PI. Really, really good show. You know, multi-channel hubs on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is one of the other ones?
Multi-channel networks, MCNs. Maker Studios. And I have nothing against Maker. I have nothing against – I'm not a huge fan of multi-channel networks. There are some that I respect. I love My Damn Channel. Maker Studios just added another name to its growing laundry list of mainstream celebrity talent with which it has inked online video-related deals. Joining Snoop Dogg and Robert De Niro, Margaret Cho has now made a deal with Maker Studios and is set to launch her own 13-episode scripted series July 3rd on her own YouTube channel. The program will be called In Transition, and it'll be a dark comedy about a trio of women newly released from prison. Sounds very similar to Netflix's new original series, Orange is the New Black. Cho is going to executive produce the series with reality TV showrunner Rico Martinez and co-star Celine Luna. The trailer is up. I will link you guys to it if you care to see it. I have not watched the trailer yet. And I'm not sure what I think. Here's the trailer. Let me put it in there. I'm not sure what I think about Maker signing so many celebrities. I would love to get some feedback from all of you right now live in the chat room. Amanda?
I'm not in the chat room. No. I don't know. I really don't. Because for me, it's kind of a toss-up in a way, because there are some celebrity-driven things that are good, but then you sit and look at the celebrity that it's driven by, and you're going, okay, are they still considered a celebrity since we haven't seen them in anything in over 20 years? And they're, you know...
And, I mean, we don't want to time Maker down and say, you know,
no.
They can't
stop
expand
doing what you're doing
and do this, but it does seem like they're getting away from where they started.
Yeah.
And if they're giving the deals to Snoop Dogg and Robert De Niro and Margaret Cho, I have two minds of it. One, I there's a part of me that thinks if they're giving all the deals to celebrities, indies aren't going to get the deals anymore.
Yeah, but they're not getting them
but
anyway.
But then, as David Nett just said, celebrity is the surest way to attract attention, which is the currency of the internet, which is true. And then he said, I wish it was quality, but celebrity is the thing. But we can change that. We as the viewing audience, not as creators, but we as the viewing audience, which we also surely are, can change that if we demand quality and not just celebrity. I certainly demand more of celebrity web series when they're on.
Absolutely.
And it's why most celebrity web series fail in my eyes. And David Nett, once again, the sage thinker that he is, said building celebrity is hard. Co-opting existing celebrity guarantees a certain amount of success. And that's a sad, sad statement on the reality of our space.
Yeah.
But it's true. But I feel like as a viewing public, if we were harder on celebrity web series, if we expected more.
Here's the deal. For a celebrity-driven...
If we didn't just jump all over it because a celebrity was in it and not
right.
give a shit about the quality, if we actually cared about the quality of what was being produced,
yeah,
we might get better content.
And, like, you know, the prime example would be, ooh, you're going to make an animated web series about a comic book adaptation that nobody reads. I'd be like, you do not understand, having been in Canada and having to deal with the fact that they don't have any superheroes. And they do, but you don't know about them, do you? We have Captain America, they have Captain Canuck. Deal with it. When you have something that comes out, even though it has celebrities driven to it, that plays to that element of you as a person and
right.
as a fan of your country and everything else, you're going, this is going to be awesome, regardless of who they get to be in it. And in the same turn, anything that Tom Hanks does is going to be fucking gold because it's Tom Hanks. Is it really gold? No, it's gold because it's Tom Hanks and he could give two shits about it. He tapes his Emmy and Oscars to the front of his car.
Right, and like David just once again said, it's not just our space is the good news.
Right.
And that is great. I'm glad that it's not just our space. I'm glad that it's not just their space. It is all of our space, including the viewers and the fans. I think we need to demand quality regardless of who is in it. And David is right again when he says we do demand quality, but TV has taught us that we are in the minority. TV has taught us that they're going to give us what they're going to give us
regardless of what we want. Right.
And the bad thing about that is that we take what they give us like pablum and we eat it.
Well, and
we don't demand better.
Right.
That's why we're all sitting around watching The fucking Bachelor and, you know, Taxidermy.
And Kim Kardashian's Water
and God knows how many other reality television shows, instead of shows, more shows like The Following, American Horror Story, Breaking Bad.
Well, no, because we have those.
And
you
these
have to
kind
realize,
of quality dramas.
We have those shows, and they're on varying networks. And that's great, you know, to use those as examples. But my further examples would be, I want to see, you know, like Wasteland or Panda as a show. That seems ridiculous, but the show is epic. If you haven't watched it, it's beautifully written, and it's done extremely well, and they're trying to make a feature. They're trying to make money to make a feature. But no, they're, you know, it's like, I really hope you get it, but hopefully you guys...
And I swear to God, I ended up watching an episode of The Bachelor the other night by accident.
Oh, God.
And I think they put something in the broadcast. There must be some kind of heebie-jeebie hoobie-jeebs coming through the TV screen, because I hate that show.
But you got sucked in, didn't
you? And I got sucked in by the drama. And then finally, what?
Cat!
Finally, I caught myself, and I'm like, what in the world? What in the all of what is holy and good are you doing? You got sucked into this horrible TV, and you're perpetuating that this is what we want and this is what we need, and it's not. You know, I don't sit and watch PBS, don't get me wrong.
Well, we do sometimes.
But I would much rather have American Horror Story, Big Bang Theory, Raising Hope, Good Wife, The Following, to watch,
right,
than The Bachelor, Toddlers and Tiaras. You know, I'm just as guilty of watching the Jodi Arias trial as anybody else. But I don't know. I hold television to a high standard. I hold web to a high standard. I expect more from celebrities. I expect more from people who've been in the industry longer.
Well, and I think
I don't know.
I think that's the thing. It's being a celebrity, I'm sorry, but it comes with a particular type of status quo as far as the rest of us are concerned. And some of us perpetuate the celebrity that can do no wrong, regardless of what they do. And some of us perpetuate the celebrity who picks and chooses and does some great, amazing, independent things. You know what I mean? And you end up, it's like, I'm not going to hold Tom Cruise up to the same standard that I hold Maggie Gyllenhaal up. I'm actually holding her up higher because I love the types of movies she chooses to do versus let's make another Mission Impossible.
And by the same token, just because a celebrity comes into this space and does something on the web or a show on the web doesn't mean that the space is going to change. There were tons of people who thought that because Charlie Sheen was doing a live web show, it was going to change the face of the face of web series. Well, no, because it wasn't quality. It was shit.
And he got another show anyway and abandoned all of that.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, it's true. Quality shows will always be outnumbered by junk. And it's higher on the web because there's so much noise on the web. I think, and I respect LSR for saying there's room for drama and reality. I think the majority of reality television makes the viewing public stupid. I think it is. It dumbs us down to the point of almost catatonia. And I wish that the majority of reality television would disappear. Now, that's not all of it. There is a lot of reality TV that I do like. I do like Hoarders. I did like Intervention. I do like some of the more feel-good programs. I love documentary stuff. I like travel shows. I like American Pickers. I don't know. It's just the dating shows and the singing shows, and it's like, oh, my God.
Wait, what?
What?
LSR just said at least the U.S. participants in reality television get paid. In the U.K., they don't. Well, that explains a lot. That explains why we have the most ridiculous celebrities in the U.S. right now. They're reality TV stars. I could give two shits. Why were they given $1 million? Why wasn't I given $1 million? I could do so much more with that than whine about the fact that I'm fake baked and I have a broken nail. Just.
It's kind of like the conversation, and this is a conversation that has no end and it has no answer. In the kind of culture that we have in the United States right now where you can get famous for doing nothing, you can get famous for being a teen mom, you can get famous literally for being on a reality show, and that's your fame. That's what you know. What did you do to get this level of fame? Absolutely fucking nothing. In a world where that is how it is, then celebrity-driven stuff is going to be, it is what it is. It is what it is.
See, but, what he said, in the UK, the stations call reality documentary, so they don't pay the actors, in quotes, who do the British equivalent of Jersey Shore. So I'm sitting there going, okay, so is it less scripted? Is it actually, let's just film these individuals, as I will try to call them, and see what happens? Or is it still, like, scripted drama with elements of reality added in, like I find most reality TV to be? Because really, you're going to go on The Bachelor, and you told your girlfriend that your other fiance, you were just going to be on a break. And you show up on The Bachelor and you didn't tell her? Like, that's, come on.
And it is, you know, I don't know. I'm hard on that. I'm hard on reality. Just like I'm hard on celebrities in this space. And this conversation is going to have no end. It needs to be an open-ended conversation that continues. Just like the conversation of where do we classify Arrested Development and House of Cards in the grand scheme of things. Now, to me, Arrested Development is a web series because this new season of Arrested Development was done for the web, entirely for the web.
But all of it...
It's based on the IP and an intellectual property that was
on
television. But that doesn't mean it's still a television series. House of Cards, though, to me, totally different. Was never intended to be a web series.
Okay.
It was intended
okay.
to be a television
I
show.
I see where you're differentialing.
Now, do I think that we're going to get to a point where all scripted drama and comedy are going to be just that? Yes. And here's the thing. We call them television shows, and those shows are defined by the medium they are distributed on. They are distributed on the television box in your house. I call them web series because they are distributed on the internet, interwebs, that I watch on my tablet or laptop or computer or internet-connected television. If I go to a movie theater, I'm going to see a movie. Or I'm watching a television movie. Or I'm watching a movie on demand. But television is the distribution medium. Television is the medium.
Mm-hmm.
So are we going to need, when we get to the point where content is content, are we going to need a new term? Because a lot of people still see when you say television show, it's defined by the box in the living room. Or are we going to call everything a television show because the box in the living room is how you watch it? Because really when you say web series or television series, you're defining the series.
The distribution.
By the way you watch it.
Right.
By where it's distributed.
But if you're watching a web series on your web-connected TV, it's
right. So then it's
moment.
Coming in,
yeah.
It's bleeding into
it's
something completely different.
You're creating a paradox. Get out of the DeLorean.
But it is. I mean, for me, it already bleeds together. Because I can watch Clutch and then go watch The Following, and I'm not sure which one was which eventually.
See, now Justin has a good point. He says, I think you're a web series if you call yourself a web series. Arrested Development and House of Cards should only be judged as web series if they advertise as Arrested Development the web series.
Which they won't.
They will never do. And I
respect David Natt for saying it's an interesting distinction, but artificial. I think the intention of the creator is very important.
Here's the thing.
It may not be 5 years from now.
Yeah.
But I think right now it is, especially when it comes to accolades, award consideration, and press. Because the press looks at them differently.
Yeah.
And I see what he thinks. He's called them a series or a show. I like to just say, we have a show. But when people ask you, well, what channel do I watch it on, what do you tell them? Well, you watch it on the web.
Online. Oh, it's usually what they follow it. But
I don't necessarily think it should be what the creator called it. I have absolutely no problem calling what we do web series because that's where you watch it. And I want to make the people who are looking for my show very, very clear about where they can find it. I don't want them to say, well, what channel is Indie InnerTube on? What, you know, cable channel is it on? Well, it's on the web, and here's where you find it. And I want you to know that it's a live web show, and I want you to know that that's where you find it. I don't want you to be confused about that at all. Now, when every house has a web-connected TV and every show has an app on that web-connected TV, then it won't matter. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but it doesn't to the regular consumer. They could give two shits. You're getting into the technicalities of what press and what people in each genre would call it or would define it as. And that's great, but at the same time, when it comes to the average layman consumer, they don't care. And that's what it really comes down to. They don't care because if it's entertaining for them, they're going to watch it. If it's from the web, if it's from TV, if it's a movie, whatever. But one thing that I was going to say is that the only similar kind of transition that we've seen has been television shows, made for television shows, that have eventually been given a movie. Firefly with Serenity and a few others. You know what I mean?
But like Justin says, if you tell people you have a TV show, they're going to expect 24.
Right. And you look like a dumbass.
Right.
I mean, and that's, you can't say that.
If you tell people you have a TV show, they're going to expect to watch it on a channel on their cable box.
Right, or they're going to expect somebody that they know outside of you, you know, who's kind of a celebrity, to be in it. Who really? Who is? You know, directed by whom? Is it by, you know?
And I agree with Rob. Anger, I love David. David just touched him. I love him so much. And you know, I like the novelty of being on the web. There's going to come a day, like Rob just said, it's a novelty. Well, there's going to come a day where it's not. But to me, until the playing field is everybody has a connected TV and everybody understands that this content could come from anywhere and it doesn't matter what, and the box in the living room is just something you watch it all on.
It's kind of like the difference between a cell phone and a smartphone. They both do the same basic functions. But a smartphone can only do certain things, and a cell phone can only do certain things.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, it's very – and it's a discussion we need to have, because when you have the IWTV Awards or you have the Streamy Awards, do any of us really want to see them dominated by House of Cards where nobody else has a chance?
No, but –
And every drama and comedy category is Arrested Development and House of Cards. Now, do they deserve it? Both shows are very, very good. But do they deserve to block out all other content created in the space? Are they better than every other piece of content created in the space in the last year?
I don't feel so, no.
I don't think so.
And that's the other thing. Like, to me, Arrested Development will never be a web series. In my mind, Arrested Development will never, ever, 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 ever in the history of ever be a web series. Because it originated and came from an IP on television that is simply a continuation of everything that was already going. It's just like Veronica
Mars.
Well,
you would have to say the same thing about All My Children and One Life to Live.
Exactly.
They will never be
web.
They will never be web soap because they are just a continuation.
Right.
A new life for All My Children and One Life to Live, whether they fail or not, and they're going to fail.
But there's kind of a difference there on the sheer and simple fact that we completely redid the fucking show, and it's not anything like you remember.
Right.
But that's just a bitter – that's like saying Veronica Mars to me will always be a television show. It will never suddenly become a movie franchise, even though they're getting a movie.
And I would agree, David Nett, I am not looking forward to it. Awards categorization was already a nightmare. Oh, this year it's going to be worse.
And of course it is. But, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, Veronica Mars, in your head, my head, is a television series. The fact that they're getting a movie does not suddenly make it a movie franchise.
You know how I would do it with those shows coming into the space?
Give them their own
House
category?
House of Cards and Arrested Development. I would do kind of like what the Oscars does for screenplay, original screenplay and adapted screenplay.
See, now, and
Arrested Development is the perfect show to say it's
an
best television show adapted for the web.
Yes, adapted screenplay. I can get behind that. I can totally get behind that. Adapted for the web. Television show adapted for the web category. I am right there. I'm there for that. And you see, David's question is, House of Cards, were it to compete with us, outshines everything in the space. Is it really a better indie web drama if we're being honest with ourselves?
Content-wise or production value?
That's what I'm asking. Like, which one is it, David? What generic question? That's very generic.
Because they spent a lot of money on production value, and if that's as far as you get when you're watching it, is how good it looks and all of these really great actors, then no, nothing comes close.
And yes, I mean, at the same time, you also have to realize House of Cards was written originally for television, and it has a very Aaron Sorkin
kind
of flair.
And it had a television budget.
Yes. And it has that flair of being made and created for television, which, as we all know, if you can get the green light for it, is going to have vastly greater values.
But I like the idea of having a best content adapted for the web.
Mm-hmm. See, now, David,
and it could be adapted screenplays in the Oscars are it could be written for any other medium. It could be written in any other media, but it was adapted for film. So it could be a play. It could be a television show. It could be a companion series, whatever, but it was adapted to fit the web format and then distributed on the web. I think that's very interesting.
Well, see, and David says both. He says writing, acting, direction were superb. Yeah, I agree with that.
But I don't see you talking about the story. Yes, the writing was superb in the story that they told. But given that none of us has really seen every single web drama out there, and trust me, I got shocked off my chair today by a web drama that I found, I cannot categorically say, and trust me, we watch a lot of content, I cannot categorically say that
yes.
House of Cards is the best drama and better than anything else that was produced in this space, because I haven't seen it all, so I don't know.
But then again, it also goes back to what are your bases of comparison? Are you comparing it to the average
web series? I can tell David likes House of Cards.
Your average web series fare that we tend that we
but
see.
But then you would have people who aren't into that genre and may not.
Right, and that's the thing. It's like, I don't doubt that my mom would love House of Cards. For one, she loves Kevin Spacey, and for two, she loves the political drama that slaps you in your face with a cup of tea. So, you know, there is something to be said for House of Cards. There are moments, like I said, it reminds me of the dirtier, grittier parts of West Wing.
Uh-huh.
That I miss that element on my television, and yet when it really comes down to it, and you ask everybody involved with House of Cards, it was created for television, written by people who write for television, directed by people who direct for television. Acted by people who act on television and in film. So, to me, you've already
It's a very interesting conundrum that is
right.
Not going to be solved on this show tonight. It's just not.
No, but I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're kind of stacking the deck with House of Cards when you put it up against.
I know, and then David is really hitting us as a devil's advocate here, but I would say it is. It was, Rob has it right, it was originally written to go to HBO. That's where they wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it went to Netflix, and so that's the business model that it adapted to and the streaming format for Netflix that it adapted to. And Rob is absolutely correct in saying if there was no streaming on TV, there would be no House of Cards.
Right.
If Netflix did not stream to television,
it might
and
be
the
on
only
HBO.
Place you could watch it was on your computers, it would not be on Netflix. No matter how much money they paid for it.
No, it'd be on HBO. It would be on the network it was originally hoped to be intended for.
I think there are a lot of shows, and David Ned just pointed this out, that started off as a TV pilot and then became web out of necessity. And I think there is a small distinction between them and shows that people set out to create shows. as a thing. And you can't police it. This is just an interesting conversation to have.
See, and Lance, I love you.
I would love to have this conversation with David in person just because I think we'd have a really good time with it.
With some drinks and some food.
With drinks and food and Shannon and Rob in town. And, you know, we all get together and have this conversation. But it is such an interesting thing to talk about because – I don't think anybody wants to see any one big Hollywood-produced project take over and get every single award.
Well, no.
And yet we're not always about awards. That's not why we do what we do. We do it because it's a passion project. And we do it because we enjoy what we're doing. And then other people do it for different reasons. So it's going to be impossible to police the space.
Yeah, but I think at the same time, like, when you have House of Cards, I mean, we all know that they're going to be in that award arena. The problem with that is that if anybody who is not in the space wants to pay attention to what's happening in the space, like your average, everyday person who goes, oh, the Streamies, the Webbies, I know some of those people, look, they're going to see You know what I mean? The web series and things that they're going to see from this space are going to be brought to them by award shows. For anybody who's not actually, you know, like navigating the space.
And it's going to be impossible to curb the one thing that I'm afraid of, and that's that voters and viewers alike get bowled over by the celebrity even if they haven't watched it. And that people would go by the buzz and the celebrity of House of Cards without bothering to watch it or any content it was up against.
Or my favorite, which is misinformation. And when they say, ooh, Kevin Spacey did a web series, I bet you he did it for nothing and it's awesome. You're like, no, he didn't do it for nothing. He got plenty paid. So, you know, all I'm worried about really when it comes down to all of this is if House of Cards does submit itself in all these categories for award shows.
There's no reason to think that they won't because they submitted to the Webbies.
Right, and you have your average everyday person who's not really inundated in the space. Their largest jaunt into web series is probably YouTube. Are going to see that as well as people who are creating or want to create things like House of Cards. And you know what I mean? Like you're going to see like what Maker's doing. I'm afraid that if House of Cards, let's say it sweeps everything or whatever, it becomes the greatest web sensation ever since the history of ever and wins all the awards, that you're going to have this influx, this massive push of celebrity-driven, high budget, everybody gets paid millions of dollars, you get a television-type budget, and it's all going to be, you know what I mean?
I mean, look at Wigs, for an example. Has that elevated the space? Fuck no.
Oh, God.
No, it hasn't.
But people rave about it. I'm like, what have you been
And now they're working with Fox. And who cares? It still hasn't elevated the space.
Really? But it's Fox. So it's like, what a nice fit. You know?
Yeah.
But with Wigs, I'm like, if you found Lauren or you found Blue or you found anything on Wigs to be like the greatest female-driven drama you've ever watched, I'm like, I feel so bad for you right now.
And seriously, is the Netflix model even a series? If you release the entire show all at once, that's not even a traditional television series.
No.
It's still a series, but it's not a traditional, as we have come to know it, television series. I think we need a new term.
Well,
are we just going to call it all script and entertainment?
No, you can't.
Why not?
Because it doesn't fit. It's too broad. It's too general. And you have this discussion start right back at the beginning. I mean, you need to define. It sucks that we have to define it. You know what I mean? Like, entertainment should be entertainment regardless of how it's delivered and how you pay for it. And yes.
And I think it will be when we have a show that starts on the web and breaks through mainstream entertainment and becomes part of pop culture. When that happens.
A heap.
But I think right now we can't. It's not even about, and I would agree with David on parsing intent. I think intent is how we'd have to parse it, but it's impossible to do. And we're going to find that out come award time with the IWTV. But right now, everything is headed in a way where you could say, okay, so you've got stuff that's released on Netflix, and they've released 24 episodes all at once. While at the same time you have a show like Revolution that's releasing one episode a week for 13 weeks, their distribution models are so different, and yet they're the same type of content as is, you know, Abigail or Clutch or any other thing that we're watching on TV or on your tablet or on the web. Hell, people aren't even watching TV on their TV anymore. They're mostly watching it on their mobile devices.
Well, yeah, because most people don't want web-connected TV.
Oh, right.
They're like, I don't like it. Take it away.
The space is going to expand to a point that we need a new word. We need a new term. We need a new way of thinking, a paradigm shift in how we think about our entertainment.
Right.
And that's going to happen. I believe it's going to be forced to happen.
Within 10 years?
When something
lifetime?
Created for the web breaks through and has an equal amount of success as something that was created and started on TV.
Which I find funny, because if you haven't realized, television's new format, which NBC and Fox are both considering the same format that ABC has announced that they're doing, for all of their series, you're gonna have the premieres from September until December, and then every single show is going to go on a 3 month hiatus, or I'm sorry, 4 month hiatus, and not come back until May sweeps, March or May. I'm like, you're gonna split every show you have, you run, you own. Every single show on ABC, come Christmas, will go on hiatus for 3 to 6 months, and then pick right back up where they left off. And I'm like, how is this? What happened to getting 25 episodes of a show from September to May with maybe 2 weeks here and there around Christmas and March? But now, like I said, NBC and Fox are considering doing the same thing so that they can showcase new shows in the limited time in between. I'm like, why don't you just not have the hiatus? And then have your new shows come after. Or something. Or, I don't know, don't slate so many shows if your other shows are doing well. I don't get it. That's, you know what I mean? Like, so that's the TV model we're deciding to go with now.
Totally, David. David says they have 25 episodes, guaranteed at least 8 of them suck.
8? Are you kidding me? Just 8? Most recently, most shows, if you haven't noticed, the first 2 are usually good, and the last 2 are usually good, and there's one in the middle that somehow ties the first 2 and the last 2 together. And everything else is filler.
So it's still kind of a pet peeve for us that we keep hearing this show is going to change it all. Because we haven't seen that yet. Even House of Cards has not changed at all.
See, and Rob has it too. They build shows kind of like a series. If you like Friends, you're going to like this one. Well, apparently nobody has because you guys are making a Friends reunion show. If you like Big Bang Theory, you'll like this one. It's another show about nerds.
Well, they invented the idea of a series to keep you coming back.
Right, but now it's like, okay, we're going to give you a series for about 4 months, then we're going to cut it off, and you're going to lose all interest.
I thought The Following did a really good job of that this season in keeping me coming back every week.
Right.
You know what I mean? And keeping me wanting to come back. They gave me a cliffhanger every week, and I loved it.
But it would be, like, seriously, the way that they're marketing it, the way that television is starting to transition, which makes me wonder about the space, all of the spaces of entertainment, really. It's as if I gave you the first book in the Harry Potter series. But after the first, 100 pages, Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland is going to be in the middle of the book. And in order for you to even get to the other part of the Harry Potter book, you have to finish Alice in Wonderland.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, so you're going to give me half my show. Then you're going to give me a whole bunch of new shows, and then you're going to give me the rest of my show, and you're expecting me in my brain and everything else that goes on in my life to carry on continuity. I can't imagine why I have a DVR or why I view things after they've aired or, skewed viewing. It's like, oh, they're going to have a hiatus all next month, so I'm just going to wait and catch up on the episodes later. And then you have movies doing the same thing in a different kind of stagger. They're like, okay, we're going to do this great epic movie in 5 different parts over the next 10 years,
mm-hmm.
whether you like it or not. Or we're just going to fill it with so many ad-bought things that it made Superman was never owned by anybody.
And here's the interesting thing, because we're talking about these big companies moving into the space. They're not all that interested in moving into the space like you think they are.
No? Oh, are you going to talk about it now? Are you going to talk about the article that I found, the golden article?
And I found the original article, actually, in Bloomberg.
Oh, God. Oh. This is epic.
I have to put this article in here.
I don't even know how this could work, really.
Because you guys are not even...
You're going to be like us for 10
going
minutes.
To believe
like,
it. David Nett's head is going to explode.
What?
And I'm not even sure that Lance has seen this. Time Warner Cable
is being an asshat.
Is actually paying media companies to keep shows off the web. That's right, you heard that right. Let me just read this little bit to you from Bloomberg. Time Warner Cable and other pay TV operators are offering incentives to media companies that agree to withhold content from web-based entertainment services such as those pursued by Intel and Apple. The incentives can take the form of higher payments, or they can include threats to drop programming. Cable companies are seeking to keep customers by ensuring access to exclusive content while fending off competition from upstart web providers. Are you listening?
I
mean, are you getting that?
I mean, it's not a big surprise when you think about it. Like, it was inevitably going to happen somehow, some way. How are we going to make money? Well, let's just pay people not to put their shit on the internet.
That's kind of what it is.
That makes
and if
more
money doesn't work, Time Warner reportedly threatens to drop the company's channels from the lineup.
Right? We'll just threaten to take your shows off of
this
our network.
This is an attempt to make cable TV more attractive and remove options for those who want to cut the cord. Now, it shouldn't come as a surprise to any of you. Here's an interesting part of the article. Online pay TV services like iTunes, Google Play, Amazon, and others offer shows, television shows, the day after airing, pricing episodes around $2, $3 apiece. While you can't watch the episodes live, you can buy them individually. This comes pretty close to a la carte programming, so it's no wonder that a company like Time Warner would try to offer incentives to media companies in order to stop that.
To keep them on cable.
I find this fascinating.
And if you realize that this is it's NBC Universal. You get that, right?
And I'm not surprised by it. David's right. It is utterly unsurprising because we all knew that this was coming. And yet it still makes me go, really?
Because, you notice the paragraph underneath that. It's as part of its NBC Universal acquisition, Comcast had to agree not to strike those kinds of deals with media companies.
And here's my favorite quote. Charter Communications, the fourth largest cable company, seeks to protect the existing pay TV ecosystem, says Chief Financial Officer Chris Winfrey. It's in everybody's mutual interest that we are protecting the ecosystem in a way that continues to keep the value of that programming that we have and the way it's delivered to our subscribers today, he said, declining to comment on specific arrangements.
Meanwhile, you have people asking if Comcast is a monopoly.
It's being called anti-competitive.
How is that? You are outwardly threatening the people who have bought into you as distribution, that if they do not cease and desist with their distribution to the internet, that you will kick them to the curb. How is it?
But you know what the best part of this is? Is that no matter how hard they try to control it, they can't.
I think it's a little late, don't you? Especially when the article underneath it is remote live TV coming to Time Warner Cable iOS app tomorrow.
Right?
And it's like, wait a minute. You guys just said you don't want what? Hold on.
And Ron Padgett just said something that I have believed for a while. His theory is that because they keep the old TV model alive, that's why online monetization has remained stagnant.
Yes. And it's funny because there have been a lot of articles published recently that they're like, oh, ad dollars aren't going online and, you know, commercials are doing poorly and the transition from online or from television to online is poor. And it's like, look who's writing the articles. Time
look
Warner.
Who's controlling the
content.
Look who's controlling the transition.
Again, I have to ask, you know, we gave a lot more shit to Microsoft for a lot less monopolization. I'm just saying. Comcast, Time Warner Cable, NBC Universal, AOL. I mean, it's like a 66% chunk of your shit in everyday life. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, over three-fourths of what you're seeing, viewing, looking, watching, distributed by, has been created for, is from a studio of, or it provides you your internet. It's coming from one company who is telling you you're either going to keep it off the web, you're going to take our money, or you're going to get the fuck out. Figure it out. Have fun. Good luck. I'd be like, I am making a network, and anyone who Time Warner Cable kicks off, come to my network.
Check what David said. He said almost every panel he went to at the last Digital Hollywood was essentially, how do we use the web to keep the old TV model alive? Well, you can't.
People.
It's a stopgap. It's never going to work.
You know what? They had this same problem. I don't know if you remember. Some of you, the majority of you, probably weren't even born. I know I wasn't. But it involved radio to television. And there was a freaking war when that happened about how television would never, ever, ever ever surpass radio in the history of ever.
And to show you that the backlash is coming, you can see what's happening with the console wars between Microsoft and Sony right now. Sony is becoming this upstart kind of anarchist PS4 platform. We're not going to stop you from doing anything. Share and share alike. Do whatever you want.
How to share a game.
Whereas Microsoft is like, we're going to monitor your shit talk constantly.
Because we have.
You can never turn your Kinect off, ever, in the history of ever.
Is anyone, like, are we living in 1984 or A Brave New World? Because I'm trying to figure out which one of the two novels we're actually in. Because there's a little bit of both.
And if you guys were not watching E3, I have to tell you,
that was
the most epic beatdown I have ever seen. Sony openly mocked Microsoft at E3. They weren't just throwing shade. They were not, and no, David, she didn't call you old.
No.
They were not throwing shade. They were not insulting Microsoft in a subtle way.
They slapped them in the face.
That was a beatdown. That was mocking them.
And here's the deal. The reason that we can talk about this right now is because this is another element of our all-in-one. If you don't have a set-top box, you probably have a PlayStation or an Xbox, which provides certain things that your set-top box will.
The number one way to watch Netflix in the United States right now is on the Sony PlayStation.
And that's the thing. For the current generations and up-and-coming generations, they have always, this is a thing that has always been available to them. It's no different than some of us, you know, who always had a microwave or always had a VCR or some kind of technology that others did not. And so we don't appreciate it because we always had it. And that's the same with a lot of people right now. They've always had a video game system. And right now their video game system doubles as their DVD player, their movie player, their streamer, their internet, their video game, and their full all-out entertainment system. And now PlayStation and Sony, as well as Nintendo, are creating more all-encompassing entertainment packages to the likes of which, you know, even 10 years ago, I would have told you it's not possible. I don't ever foresee in the next 20 years having a system that will do 50 different things and still manage to allow me to play video games. You know what I mean? It was just impossible.
I don't want to have a system that's constantly watching me.
No, the Xbox system freaks me out.
It freaks me out.
Because I already know that they have some substantial government contracts, as does Sony. I mean, everybody does. Don't think that they don't. But it's a whole other deal, especially if you've been keeping track of Verizon and all the other phone company shit lately, to be all you need is one person who knows even the littlest amount of things to view your Kinect 24/7, to listen to your Xbox 24/7, and to basically spy on you because you have a video game system, entertainment system, that has all audio on and all camera on, even when you've pushed the power button. I wouldn't be surprised if you unplugged it for the wall and after 20 minutes it's still active. You know what I mean? It's just like, again, are we in A Brave New World or are we in 1994? Or 84, sorry, 1984 or Brave New World? A little bit of both? One or the other?
A little bit of both. And yet then you've got this article in Variety that says, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg say studios will implode. VOD is the future. Video on demand.
Oh, that's frightening.
They see the imminent arrival of a radically different entertainment landscape, including pricing movie tickets, a vast migration of content to video on demand, and programmable dreams.
Well, how many movies?
They were doing a panel at the USC School of Cinematic Arts together.
How many movies and television shows and things have we been able to get on demand before they ever hit theaters, before they ever hit television? Because we have that service. Why am I going to go pay $16.98 to go watch, you know, movies in high definition 3D, oh my shit, woo, and sit in an uncomfortable seat that 5 million other people have sat in, eat popcorn and drink Coke and not go to the bathroom when I can get it on demand a week before it hits theaters in the comfort of my own home?
This is a really interesting article. I'll put it in there for you guys. Allison Fenor just posted it on IWTV. But we're going to move on now. Because it's time. We got some reviews to do.
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
David Nett gave me one to review today, and I'll be damned if that doesn't end up being comedy.
Oh, my God.
We'll get there in a minute. Let's hit you.
Me?
Yeah.
Why?
Ladies and gents.
Ladies and gents?
Ladies and gents. Talk about it.
Ladies and gents. What can I say about ladies and gents?
Talk about Shannon. Talk about Shannon.
Well, I was going to say lipstick and lies and suckers on the counter. Liquors, lines, and lollipops. That would describe the lipstick, lines, and lollipops would so describe the past 2 weeks of ladies and gents. Shannon Nelson is awesome, I have to say. That whole episode.
She really is. She is the awesomest.
But that whole episode was so great because I think, especially for anybody in this space and creating web series, even creating movies and television shows, can relate to that one on the one friend who shows you a short or a film or
their web series.
A series or something, and it's just like, I don't know how to honestly talk to them.
I love that.
About that.
That
so,
was awesome.
It was beautiful. Here's the thing. If I don't talk to you about your show, there's a good chance either I didn't watch it or I don't like it and I don't want to hurt your feelings. So that's. And if you ask, can I have your honest opinion, don't get upset with me if I actually give it to you.
We do. We would tend to tell you.
But, yeah. That was awesome. And don't ever lie to your friends about their clothes, ever.
No, but you got to talk about the other one, too.
But then the other one, was ladies. That was the first ladies, last week's ladies. And this week's ladies was, we've all been there. We've all known that guy or that girl who carries the hand sanitizer and can't stand the disgusting nature of everything around them, especially in a public bathroom. I think all of us at one point or another kind of go, ooh, public restroom. I probably shouldn't do this or that or that or that in the bathroom in public. But setting a sucker on the counter, a lollipop.
I probably wouldn't do that.
At the sink that you just had your shoes on and are, yeah, no, I don't even like to lean over some of the bathroom counters I've been in because there's water everywhere. You don't know what's in the water. You don't, even if it just looks like soap. I think Stephanie Thorpe was the germaphobe lady. Tip for paper towels.
Yeah.
Tip for paper towels. That's what I learned from the ladies. This. And don't ever put a sucker down on the counter. But kudos to you for being able to curl your eyelash.
I have such a big pet peeve of the people who use the little paper toilet seat covers.
Yeah.
And then flush the toilet and know that it doesn't go all the way down, but they.
Oh, and leave it. And they leave it.
So they leave it stuck halfway in and out of the toilet and because then I can't touch it.
Because it gets wet. And because
your ass was the only one on it.
No, my favorite is when that happens and, like, clearly the middle didn't, they didn't break the strip in the middle to push the thing down into the toilet so that, you know, you're not actually supposed to pee on the little circle in the middle of the toilet seat cover, people. Just saying. Because it's cloth and it spreads. But yeah, have you ever walked into a bathroom and like pushed over the thing and seen the whole toilet seat cover wet with one of those things on it?
Ew.
Because it soaked up the water?
Ew.
Because they didn't let it flush?
Yuck.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's not right.
No, but then there was Jens. And there was Steve. Steve and his little Hannibal ponytail. I love it. And lipstick. I was very confused for a minute about where we were going. With Steve in all his fabulousness and lipstick. I'm like, ooh, are we going to get a tutorial? Do guys actually do that? Do they like, no. And then the most expensive thing, the question at the end being the most expensive thing you've ever thrown up. What would that be? Because I think for you it's absinthe.
Yeah, probably.
The most expensive thing you've thrown up is absinthe?
I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah?
Maybe not. I don't know.
Like, that was a very good question, Rob. And I like that you take selfies in your shower bath with your friends. Do you post those on Tumblr? Because I'm looking for that series of photos. But, a bottle of champagne, I guess, maybe.
I threw up a bottle of Dom once.
Yeah, so I've thrown up champagne with like a filet mignon, so I guess that would be the most expensive. I'm trying to think like what's the most expensive. I know somebody threw up caviar that was like $500 a plate, so I didn't do it. I don't like caviar, but there you go. And that's Steve's bathroom. That's great. I want, see, Rob, I need this series on Tumblr or Facebook or on Ladies and Gents somewhere of you taking self, like Steve's bathroom being, and his shower bath being the selfie portrait, like, booth for Ladies and Gents. I really think y'all need to make that a thing. So just invite all of the people that you've had on Ladies and Gents and take selfies in the shower bath, like it's a photo booth at the mall. I really, I want that. I want that series, that extra for Ladies and Gents.
Now, you also have to talk about the Little Horribles, because that's a new one we just found.
Yeah, and I saw that one by accident. I'd seen a few articles pop up in my inbox over it, and I was like, what is this about?
Yeah, there's an article about them on TubeFilter.
Yeah, and I had, and that, but that wasn't the one I found. It was from somewhere else. I can't remember what it was. Maybe Web Series Weekly or something that came in my inbox. And it people are likening it to Awkward Black Girl, which, I don't know. They seem to be two different beasts when you compare them.
I would agree.
I wouldn't actually compare them to each other or a like kind of thing. Like, if you like this, you're going to like that.
I really enjoyed our sexual activity.
Rich, sexual activity? That was the first episode. That was last week. But it's funny.
Little Horribles is written and created by Amy Rubin.
Who's hilarious. Like, do you not...
the main character, yeah.
Do you not just, like, automatically fall in love with her? Because you're like, oh, look at you. Being your lesbian self. Just trying to make your way.
Now, the creator of Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl is involved with this show.
Yes.
Just to clear that up.
Right. But saying that they're like each other, I don't know if I would sit them in the same boat. Similar categories, almost like mocky reality. But, I wouldn't even say...
Go ahead and tell them what it's about.
Well, no, I wouldn't even say mocky reality, because first episode or second episode. Because it really is just about sort of your everyday events with, what is her name, the main character? You're not helping me.
I guess I don't remember.
You just had it up.
I wasn't looking.
Anyway.
And it doesn't give her name.
You're helpful. No, but it's just like, you know, one of those life situations that happens. Sexual activities. Breaking up. One night stand. I'm not really sure. First episode's a little like, wow, what happened? But I love the friend coloring on a cereal box over the phone. Like, I would totally be that friend. And being like, what are you talking about? You just met her. What do you mean you're going to have, like, all of your children with...
And then, of course, we also... There were two other comedies that we reviewed.
Wait, no, you got to get to the second episode.
Oh, cool. You go right ahead.
What? You watched it, too. What is it with me doing all the reviews here?
Because I got a whole bunch of them to do now and next. I'm getting you more involved in the show. Go on.
No, you're not. You're eating ice. That's not helpful.
My cup is empty.
Good. You're not helping.
This is not professional.
It is professional. People love it. No, but the second episode is, we all have those conversations in G-Chat or in any sort of situation where you can see the other person you're talking to.
Yeah, but she was being creeptastic.
She was being creeptastic, but at the same time, don't you find it a little awkward when somebody types LOL and they're not actually laughing?
Yeah.
Or like, LOL is sort of like, oh, okay, well, you know, they may not be laughing out loud, but maybe they're laughing on the inside. I get that. But when it's blatantly like a huge series of laughs or, you know, rolling on the floor laughing my ass off, this huge conglomeration of laughter from somebody, but they're sitting there with a stoic expression like they could give two shits about what you're talking about. You know, I got it. She was lying. She was totally lying.
She's like, what? Why are you talking about? You're telling all these lies.
But yeah, then it just got creepy.
Good show. You guys should check it out. It is called The Little Horribles.
Yes, but the be right back was the best moment, I think.
Yeah, because she said, you talked to BRB and you're still sitting right
and
there.
And you were sitting right there. I had to just take a break. from your never-ending V-Chat.
And then we watched, of course, Convos with my 2-year-old.
Oh, I'm so glad they had another episode.
I'm naked.
I'm the boss. That was the last episode. Talk about 3.
I like 3 just because she really only says one thing throughout the whole thing.
I want another cookie.
That I should have another cookie.
Not entitled. I just want.
I love, love, love the guy that they've got playing the little girl.
Who is that guy?
He's brilliant.
Is he like his neighbor?
He's absolutely fucking brilliant. And the barrette in his hair.
He comes out with a barrette and little fairy wings, and you're like, I honestly, and a blue shirt that matched hers, and I'm sitting here like in the back of my mind going, who is this guy? Is he like some actor he found? Is this his best friend?
It's brilliant.
Is this like the uncle? Like, who is this guy? Because he's awesome for doing
this show. If you guys are not watching Conversations with My 2-Year-Old, I don't even know what to tell you. It is, I'm going to put up a YouTube channel, because it is hilarious. It really is. They have 3 episodes up. I think it's funny as hell. And last week's episode, when she's like, I'm naked, I'm the boss, that has got to be a meme. It should be a meme if it's not.
I'm naked, I'm the boss.
I'm naked, I'm the boss.
Right? That is so much better than bitch I might be. Because that's not even a real meme. That was just a misconception of what he said. But I'm naked, I'm the boss. She said that, man. Logic of a 2-year-old.
And I love that they incorporate the real 2-year-old into parts of it, so you never forget that that's who he's having
mm-hmm.
a conversation with.
That's who he's seeing.
Who he's seeing. That's who he's talking to.
Because it is really the main actor. His real life wife. His real-life 2-year-old, and again, I'm wondering who the guy who plays the full-grown male version of his daughter. I'm like, is this your
daughter? He's brilliant, and I love his face. I feel like I should have another picture.
I feel like that. Like his 5 o'clock shadow and messed-up hair. He's wearing the girl, this shirt.
It's the barrette. It's the barrette that kills me.
It was the wings this time. When
it's the barrette. It's highly, highly, highly recommended. You guys have to watch it. I would love to know what, especially Rob Padgett, David Nett, Lance, I would love to know what you guys think of it. I'm assuming David Nett has seen it. He just said he's a brilliant actor. And he really is hilarious.
He's perfect.
His facial expressions, he catches the nuances of what, and you just know that that's what the little girl's thinking when she's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the first episode when she was all, no, you can't talk to her right now. No. And in this one, it's just, and I would agree with David completely, the execution of it
mm-hmm.
is impeccable. It is perfect. The timing, the,
everything.
The nuance, the facial expression, it's just, it's hilarious, and it's simple, and it's short, and it's brilliant. And
the thing about it, too, is it brings about, if we were honestly just watching a 2-year-old have this conversation with him, it would have no novelty. It'd be like, oh, that's cute. She's a 2-year-old. It just spins it on its head when it's like, if this were 2 adults having this conversation, this is totally how it would go.
And I love the like sarcastic looks that he gives it. I feel I should have another cookie.
No, really. I do.
No, there are no cookies. We don't have any more. What do you think? I should manifest you a cookie? Yes, I want a cookie.
I want a cookie. We don't have any more cookies.
Okay.
I feel like I should have.
Okay, I want a cookie.
But the best part.
Because she knew.
Right.
There were cookies.
There were still cookies. You ate all the cookies. We have no more cookies. You ate the cookies. All right. But
exactly. And David really hit it. He said he loves seeing the full credits because there's a whole whack of people working on it.
Right.
It's not just one guy pointing the camera.
Yeah,
this is a show.
It's very well done. It's impeccably shot. The shot selections and cuts and the edits are great.
I'm absolutely stunned by the quality of the timing.
And
how funny they all are.
No, because then.
And how real it is.
The best part.
I'm naked.
I
gotta get a sound bite.
In this episode, you know the best part is honestly you know because he's daddy's little girl. She's gonna get a cookie.
Oh, she was always going to get a cookie.
She was always going to get the cookie. So she gets the cookie, and I know I'm ruining it, but she gets the cookie. And of course, as soon as she they transition and you see his actual daughter. You're like, what? Followed by the best line in the whole episode. You better not have given her another cookie. From the wife in the room next over.
But the wife has the great line in the first episode too. It's like she is not your wife right now. She is the princess. And then the camera goes to the wife and she just says, I'm the princess right now. If you guys haven't seen it, like David and Rob both said, it exploded quickly, and it's because it's really, really good.
Right, and again, watch the credits. It's not some guy and his wife just filming home videos with a friend of theirs. It's a show, and
I think
it's done well.
Of the three episodes they put up, episode two is epic. Episode two is absolutely epic. Because that's where I'm Naked, I'm the Boss comes from. But it's the barrette and his hair. It's just, oh, my God.
The wings.
The barrette and his hair. He had it in episode one and episode three, and it's hilarious. And David, they are terrified of her, and you can see it.
You can see it in the dad's face. He's like,
and the mom. I'm
Well, no, because I was, when he said...
It's like she's a little terrorist, and they know it.
Well, no, like when he said no, remember? And she got real quiet, she put her face down, I was like, oh, she's going to scream. We're going to have that moment that all parents fear right now at 2 years old is to have the temper tantrum, because we haven't seen it yet. I feel one is coming.
And he plays it with this kind of menacing no. In that first episode where he's coming in to see his wife,
and he steps
and
out of
she
the
just
corner.
Kind of steps her out from around the corner and goes, no.
It's almost like, is this like a horror film? It's like, what's happening?
And David's right. Every friend that I have that has kids looks like that.
Yes, they're terrified.
They're terrified of their children.
Terrified because they've become little people. They can say yes or no, and they have feelings, and they express
and they
themselves.
They can eloquently speak their mind.
They can express themselves with an absolute honesty that you don't want other people to hear. Because you know that's going to be an episode. Something that they don't want to be known in public, you know, like, you know, mommy had a big shit today.
But it's like, it's because kids have that level of honesty that we don't have anymore.
That we got rid of.
And that first one was, it was like you almost expected the psycho thing to be
right?
when she came out. It's like, you go over there.
Dun, dun.
Especially the line, see how much fun we're having.
See, I know. But then it cuts back to this beautiful little 2-year-old girl, like, laughing and squeeing. And
that's
like,
his real daughter, too.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's his real wife and his real daughter. But in the third one, I was legitimately expecting a temper tantrum. When he said no, and there are no more cookies, and you can't have one, and he dropped his head, I was like, oh, it's coming. I had a scream. And then, you know, like, that moment. Because everybody who doesn't have kids knows somebody who does. And you've been around them at that one point where the one kid has a temper tantrum.
And you've seen all the adults in the room when the kid gets told no. You've seen every adult be like, like freeze for a
second.
Hold
on, wait, you'll actually hear the crickets.
But it is. It's like.
Waiting for the Armageddon of.
You know, and you're like. And everybody's looking around like waiting.
Is it coming? Is it coming?
And Lance is right. It is hilariously funny because he's adult level serious
yes!
while wearing the angel wings and the barrette.
And the barrette. And they're hers. And you can see that. Going
episode two, the epicness of episode two was just I haven't laughed that hard until today at a web series, especially a short one. Like I did when I heard I'm Naked, I'm the Boss.
Episode 2. Lance, if you don't watch any other episodes, at least watch episode 2 because it's awesome. And the first one really is kind of creepy when he slides out from the door because you're like,
no.
But at the same time, you know just as much as I do from a couple people we've been around that have little kids.
They can appear anywhere.
They come out of nowhere and they'll have like some, you know, obnoxious thing. It's like the one of the GIFs I saw, some 2-year-old walking around and it's got one of mommy's toys. In the hand, you're like, what are you doing? Why did your child have that? What happened?
But I'm telling you, I just think episode two was stunningly brilliant.
And yes, Rob is going to be the leader of the conversations with my 2-year-old hipsters.
It's just, I'm naked. I'm the boss.
I'm the boss.
Where are your clothes? I took them off.
I was hot.
And again, it was like, I need another story.
Well, yeah, no, because that's how kids are. They're like, I don't understand. No, I'm not done. Like, my day is not done. I need another story. Right now. I'm not done.
Lance is watching episode 2 now, and you know he's going to come back. But as good as all of those comedies were.
Oh, my God.
This next one, I have to thank David Nett for, and there's only one episode.
Why?
I don't get more. I am going to be on
a rampage. Why did you give us a show with one episode?
I don't know why he would do that to me. David Nett sent me a web series to watch called John and Jen Are Married. And I want to snatch the hair right off the top of his curly-headed head because there's only one episode, and I hope there's more coming.
He just said they're making more.
Because, Lord have mercy, that was funny. I had to call Amanda in the room and stop it and go all the way back.
Rewind.
You have to see this. And there was something about the whole, the first part of the conversation, he's like, want to have sex? She's like, no.
No.
And then when
he's
like, you know, we could, you don't even look at me.
Don't
right
look
now.
At me ever. Again. Ever.
And then after they do, and he's like, hey, I could get, well, for one thing, do you want to have a baby? Well, I need something to fill up that vast empty space inside myself. So maybe that would, I could fill up the, get. No,
not you anymore.
I don't want you anymore.
I don't want you to fill it anymore. It was just.
Oh, God. And then my favorite part.
Tell me about this heaven thing.
No. Was when she said, we're all going to die.
Oh, that one.
We're all going to die.
Oh, that sucks.
How soon? Soon. That's the thing that sucks about life. It's that there you are and you're in Genesis and then it's over.
No, it's like there you are. Here you go. Woo. Bye. No,
see, Lance has got it. I think I just need to hear one more story.
No, but then it was, who's that? And she's all like excited and happy. And she's like, who's that? That's Toby.
I met him at church.
You're an atheist. What the fuck? He's like, I know, we're going to have a Bible study. So, heaven, what's that about? What's this heaven thing?
How do you get there?
No, first it was, what is this heaven thing?
And then how do you
get
there?
It's the Lord's kingdom. Okay.
And how do you get there?
How do you get there? You accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior?
No. What's the plan B?
Not doing that. Plan B.
Oh, my God. I laughed. It was just so... huge thanks to David Nett for sending me that. And kudos to John and Jen Are Married for being the Indie Intertube Comedy of the Week.
Yes!
It is, and I agree with David, it's cleverly written and claustrophobically shot, and that's what makes it.
Right? It's very, very close, just like personal.
When she hit the guy with the fry pan.
Oh.
I almost peed myself. I was laughing so hard.
We could have just got a dog. That was a well-seasoned iron skillet, though.
Yeah.
Cast iron skillet, I do have to say.
I love it. I love that show. I am in love with it. One episode is not enough. And they're right up there with Conversations with My 2-Year-Old and Ladies and Gents right now as far as my favorite comedies to watch. Those guys make my week. And Ladies and Gents, they're another one of those shows. Now I have three of them, Ladies and Gents, Conversations with My 2-Year-Old, and John and Jen Are Married. Those are the kinds of shows that you can share with your friends. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I have told everybody about I'm Naked, I'm the Boss.
Oh, I see it roll around on a couple of things, and I'm like, I didn't do that! Somebody else passed it along this time!
I think I just need one more story. I think I just need one more cookie.
No, it wasn't. She needed a story. She wanted a cookie.
Yeah, she needed a story. She wanted a cookie.
There's a big difference in a 2-year-old's mind. However, I'm Naked, I'm the Boss.
It's the best meme. Forever. I'm Naked, I'm the Boss. That and the fact that in John and Jen Get Married, that after they had sex and they're laying there in the bed, and he's like, I can feel that itch. She's like, I do not want you anymore.
To feel it anymore. Thank you.
Don't.
Don't look at me ever. Ever.
we're all going to die. That, and what did she say to him that had me just killing myself? When he's like, I've never thought about it. That's because you don't have complex thought.
Right.
You don't possess complex thought.
Well, no, because he said, because he was like, well, how soon? And she's like, soon. Like, that sucks. Yeah, it does. Really does. Well, why didn't I ever think about that?
Because like, you don't possess complex thought. I love having these kind of comedies that are, they're a little bit, you know, like they're a little bit different. They're a little bit off color in their own ways. They're a little bit non-PC in their own ways. And yet they're not offensive at all, and you can share them with people, and people will get the comedy.
Now, I'm pretty sure we actually make them more offensive on this show.
Yeah. And I think that of the comedies that we've talked about, Ladies and Gents, Conversations with My 2-Year-Old, and John and Jen Are Married are the kinds of shows that you can share with people.
Yeah.
Conversations with My 2-Year-Old, it's utterly brilliant. It is, and you can share it with anybody. Now, speaking of brilliant, now we got to talk drama.
Oh.
And you guys are going to be shocked at what drama of the week is. First thing I want to talk about, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 dramas to talk about. let's see, Entangled with You,
mm-hmm.
which is Karen's new show. I have to say... She needs to get those episodes out quicker. This was only the third episode. I love the chemistry between all of the characters. Everybody in the show seems to have a very comfortable chemistry with each other. And I like that. And I like that the dialogue seems easy and real.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot. She still, unfortunately, has some inconsistent sound issues. And I hate pointing that out, but it's true. And David Nett has to leave, so he's leaving Rob in charge as his designated shit disturber. That's fine. Thank you for being here, David. Our best to John and Jen Get Married and the brilliant Shannon Nelson.
And yes, because David retweeted my tweet of them winning Comedy of the Week and gave me the two Twitters for the leads.
Yay!
Woo! Jackie and Jameson.
Don't even look at me.
Ever.
And, of course, the brilliant Shannon Nelson is on, because you know we love her. Karen's got some inconsistent sound issues, and I think if she could clean that up, it would be better. And the only other thing I have to say about this week's episode, without spoiling it for anybody, is the ending is a big uh-oh.
Yeah.
For the lesbian couple.
Though it was kind of getting... It's kind of a little that's right. When we saw their first conversation over Skype.
Yeah, yeah.
You knew there was going to be problems, right?
I was just trying to find I'm Naked, I'm the Boss.
Oh, you're going to have to like, watch the whole thing. Oh, there it is.
I'm the boss. No, I'm the boss.
Here it comes.
No, I'm the boss.
Here it is.
I'm the boss. I'm the boss. I'm the boss. No, I'm the boss.
See? I'm the boss. And it's frightening. No.
But don't spoil Mingle Media hasn't seen it yet.
No, I won't. Don't spoil Entangled. I'm not intending to.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if the ending is a big uh-oh. Big uh-oh. Moving on from that, Amanda's going to take a small, tiny break to go see what's got Cricket losing her shit. And I'm going to talk to you about the Clutch Season 2 finale. Katya Gardner was in it.
Humble what?
Yeah, she was in X-Files. You remember her?
Yeah.
Yeah. Katya Gardner was in it. And I loved seeing that side of Jillian Clare. I really, really did. Hold on. Amanda, it's still light outside. The mower guy might be here.
Okay.
I loved being that side of Jillian Clare. It was something really dramatic and dark for her to do, and I loved seeing it. Katya Gardner as well. I love her. I don't want to spoil the Clutch finale for anybody.
Wait, but what's ironic is that literally for some odd reason, the entire X-Files cast is like having a Twitter reunion right now. so the tweet that caught it was on it from pictures in the pilot. It would be awesome. So somebody tweeted.
It was nice to see such darkness in this, but come on, we're talking Clutch here. It's been dark all season long. Clutch has never been a show, Jonathan's never been a creator who shies away from darkness. But seeing Jillian Clare play this kind of dark range is completely different from anything we've seen her play before. I was really, really impressed with her. I had no idea that Tom Conkle could be that smarmy. And I know that I probably should have. But Tom can be pretty damn smarmy. I will tell you that right now. Oh, and Mingle Media says she saw that episode so we could talk about it. Tom Conkle as the white slave trader was creeped. I wanted to take a shower after he talked about the tea. Like, I was like, oh, my God. This episode didn't shy away from anything, just like it hasn't the entire season. This has been a shining example, and I would put Clutch up against damn near any other show on any medium distributed on any platform, and I think it would do very well against it. We did not get a lot of resolution in this episode, and yet we also did not get a huge massive cliffhanger. We still don't know what happened to the girls. We don't know where Kylie or Marcel are. I was expecting more than that, but I'm not at all disappointed. I think I am most impressed with Jillian Clare and Tom Conkle. In the finale. And I won a season 3. I think Clutch is brilliant. I think it's one of the most brilliant web series dramas we have. And the most adult.
But really, you find it odd that Tom Conkle can go there?
He was really, really smarmy.
He has a great, I don't know where he taps it from, but he can tap into some wicked stuff. And it's just awesome to see. Not in, like, reality, but as he's acting. I would hate to be on the end of Tom Conkle if he was ever in that movie.
I absolutely love Clutch, and Jonathan is a brilliant creator, and I love what they did this season with having different people direct. So kudos to him. Kudos to all of the Clutch crew on an outstanding season.
Season 3.
And when do we get season 3?
Yesterday.
Speaking of new seasons, The Inn just started their second season.
Yes, it did, last week.
After the cliffhanger that we were left in season 1 with the husband showing up in the form of Mark Gant, I knew it was going to be interesting to see where Steve went with this. Looking at my notes, in episode 1, I love that they used a quote, and of course Steve did this. I love that they used a quote at the beginning from the 1945 film Spellbound to start off the episode. I thought it was a very well-constructed and interesting back and forth, as we heard from both Jane, played by Crystal Chappell, and her supposed husband, played by Mark Gant, telling their sides of the story. And we sort of got an explanation for the red ball.
Sort of. Red balls in any kind of movie, especially associated with laughter of children, never a good thing. Ever. Any toy, really. Any child's toy that just does something. No.
And what did I come out of that episode with? At the end of the episode, mine was, so Jane is batshit and Lola's creepy. And
hey,
not quite who we thought she was. So, and then in episode 2, my notes kind of explain what happened to me when I watched episode 2. All that my note says is,
WTF? What?
I have no idea what the fuck is going on.
Close enough.
That is exactly what my notes say for episode 2 of The Inn. I have no idea what the fuck is going on.
Not in a bad way, right? Like in a, I want.
No.
It's not like, what is this? Is so poorly put together. I don't understand. It's, what is happening?
I need the next episode tomorrow. Give me the rest of the show. Yeah.
Because kind of the sentence of the day in the second episode is, you shouldn't be here.
That's never a good sentence in this kind of genre. Because that means you're either going to get murdered, you're already dead, or...
Steve definitely has a very Hitchcockian flair about the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see him do a longer format.
Yeah.
Psychological dramas.
I don't know if I can handle that.
But that's the biggest compliment I could give Steve Silverman is to tell him that I have no fucking idea what's going on.
Right? Like, where are we going? What rabbit hole are we going down on this show? Because I am with it.
Oh, yeah, I'm down. I'm down. And then the last drama that we want to talk about is called Deja Vu.
Oh, man.
The series. It is...
This show.
Buenas, señores.
It is a Spanish series. They are on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Tumblr, and Pinterest. They have English subtitles. Their synopsis is in Spanish. They have a ton of content. I don't know how many episodes. Looks like 4, 9, 10, 12. They have their whole first season up. We just found them, and I was stunned stupid, as was Amanda, with this show.
So good.
I am so glad they have English subtitles. The show.
Buenas, señores.
That's the beginning of it. The show is fantastic. I would highly recommend it. We are going to talk about it as much as we possibly can. There is its website. It has English subtitles, so everybody can watch it. I'm just looking to see if they have anything on their Facebook that's in English. I mean, you could probably get a pretty good idea of what the show is about from the first episode. The acting is just amazing. The production value, everything about this show is top-notch, is as good as it gets. I really have no words for how good it is. And let's see, ooh, there's an English website. Hold on. About synopsis. Okay, it is the story of a young man, Sebastian, who can see tragedies, accidents, murders, death before they happen. And therefore, he has the opportunity to change them. What he doesn't know is that in doing so, he will change others' faith, unleashing events that not only will put them in danger, but also himself and the woman he loves. It is 12 episodes of suspense, action, drama, and love in which viewers will witness a series of events that show that having a power does not necessarily bring good things to this human species. Everything that the characters make, every choice that they make, will be key to the secrets that keep Deja Vu and therefore will make the experience of watching web series something different and exciting. It was shot in various locations in Bogota, Colombia, and it has English subtitles. In its first month of release, the 12 episodes reached 23,000 views on YouTube, 5,000 likes on Facebook, and had more than 40 national and international media talk about the project. I really highly recommend the show. It is outstanding, and I mean, we were hooked from the first episode. We're a few episodes in, and it is enough for us to tell you that this week, Deja Vu the series is the Indie Inner Tube drama of the week.
Yeah.
It is definitely something that those of you who like psychological thrillers, noir-type drama, and gritty drama, anybody who's a fan of Clutch, all of you guys are going to love it. It is extremely well acted. And I think the intent of the story and the quality of the story and the writing comes through even with the English subtitle. So I would highly recommend it. And there you have it. The Indie Inner Tube Comedy of the Week is John and Jen Are Married, and the Indie Inner Tube Drama of the Week is Deja Vu the Series. Wow, and still 20 minutes to spare. I think we're actually going to end it early.
Considering there's a storm coming?
Considering there's a storm coming, considering that we got all of our interviews and stuff in, we do want to let you guys know that we are working on getting my schedule at work to at least to a point where I know when I'm going to work. Working at HSN is a blast, but it has been hectic as of late. But we want to get back with the consistency of our podcast and the consistency of our Indie Inner Tube TV show on Mingle Media. And hopefully we will be able to relaunch all of that, including Indie Interstate, in July. So look for that shortly after the 4th of July weekend. Until then, it will be sporadic Indie Inner Tube TV episodes, but a consistent podcast, we hope. But yeah, we're going to be back on a regular basis, bigger and better than ever. And believe me, there are a lot of shows out there talking about web series. We can appreciate and respect and love the fact that there's so many in this space that are talking about what we do, what all of you do. But make no mistake, we are the original. We are in the inner tube. We are creators just like you. And we will never, ever, ever stop supporting indie web series in this space. And we're not going anywhere. Right, Amanda?
That's correct.
So on that note, please go out there and watch The End, watch Clutch's finale, watch John and Jen Are Married, and share that that funny episode. Please go and watch Conversations with My Two-Year-Old, watch Entangled with You, watch Little Horribles, and watch Deja Vu. Go on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and let these people know that you heard about them right here on Indie Inner Tube. And when you're watching The End, listen to that outstanding soundtrack by Rob Padgett. The music is incredible, and I do have that written in my notes. The music is awesome.
Hey!
What?
Jackie from John and Jen is following me now. Woo!
Woo!
That's you are all celebrities, okay? Oh, and there's one thing that I have to say, and I'm not going to name the show, but I just want to tell everybody that you all create history. And you know why? Because you're not telling us that you're creating history. So thank you for not telling us that you are creating history. Anyway, there's no basis.
I decided against really getting into that.
Right? I just wanted to say that.
The word of advice, if you're a web series, even if you're turning your web series and re-editing it into a feature film, even if you've gotten millions of views, please do not say that those two items have made history. They haven't. You're making history every day by just getting out there and making the content that you want to make and not listening when the studios tell you no. You don't need to say that you're history-making, groundbreaking, first ever to ever do anything. Just go out there and make your content, and we'll support it. And we will tell everybody about it. Trust me, that's the way you're going to break new ground. That's how you're going to be history-making. Is by getting out there and claiming and carving out a space for yourself and making the content that you want to make and taking it directly to the fans and not listening when somebody with the power to control the world, they think, through money, tells you no. And on that note, thank you all once again for listening. We've missed you guys, and we're very, very glad to be back. And you will be getting us on a consistent basis, bigger and better than ever. And until next time, everybody.
This is Commander Shepard. And this is my favorite podcast and live-hosted web series on the Citadel.
The Internet is not something that you just dump something on.